This is the Read On Air podcast from RNIB.
Verity Smith is an international dressage rider, singer-songwriter and author who is living proof of the ability within disability. Despite having Stargardt's, she's represented Team GB at the World Games, regularly competes against sighted riders, and hopes one day to represent Great Britain in the Able-Bodied Olympics. Her book, The Groper's Guide, is the first part of her autobiography and offers a very humorous insight into the hidden world of the unseen. Verity, thank you so much for joining us on Read On Air.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now, you begin The Groper's Guide by telling the audience exactly what the physical challenges of being a blind author are. Could you outline some of those to us?
Well, for a start, obviously writing, handwriting, which is actually how I normally would process my thoughts, if you like. Things come out much clearer if I write things by hand. It's quite tricky when you can't see. And I wrote an entire chapter with a pen that wasn't working at one point. Computers, when I actually wrote The Groper's Guide, they were great, but I wasn't really a fay with the technology and JAWS and all the sort of screen reader stuff. So I decided to go back to old tried and true methods. I was very used to dictating because I had an amanuensis through my exams. But I got very bored of my own voice. So I ended up actually doing chapter by chapter with different accents just to keep myself motivated and to keep myself not from nodding off at my own sort of mutterings. I think now I am actually much more a fay with the screen readers, so I have actually been writing the follow-up with the computer. And the sadness with that is, of course, that every time the computer reads back what I've written, all its sort of dynamic, sort of emotional or humorous nuances are completely killed by the voice of what sounds like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
There's an awful lot of humour, obviously, talking to you now. I can hear that's very natural. Did you find it easier to remember the happy moments of going blind rather than the sad ones?
The gift that I had was that I began to lose my sight as a child. Children have this incredible resilience, and you don't see something as a problem. You see it as something you've just got to get used to and work through. And there were dark moments, of course there were. I mean, there are moments of frustration, I think. It's an instant, oh, gosh, why can't I do this? But I think I had this resilience. So, yeah, I mean, I think I just looked at it as a game that I was going to play, and I wanted to play it well.
I think you certainly capture the surreal aspect of not really being the native. You get mixed messages from your brain. You kind of think you should be able to see this man who's giving you a diagnosis, and then you equate him with one of the characters in The Muppets.
Stargardt's, I heard Professors Bird and Arden proclaim in triumphant unison from the opposite side of the desk at Moorfields. I sat watching them, gently ebbing in and out of focus across the sea of formica and papers that lay between us, and wondered for a moment what on earth the two men diagnosing my future actually looked like. They had spent the best part of a week under my scrupulous observation, as had I under theirs. Yet despite my valiant efforts, their faces remained as bleached and featureless as the white coats they wore. From where I was sitting, through the vaporous fog that had manifested itself over my eyes, the two professors looked rather like the two old gents in the balcony from The Muppet Show, jeering backwards and forwards, their rubber mouths grinning broadly at me. How strange, I thought, to learn my fate from such an unlikely pair. I let out a little giggle and instantly felt Mum's fanged stiletto jab irritably into my left foot. "Are you listening?" she said in an unnaturally calm voice. I was vaguely, but in truth, I was more intent on looking.
I think this is the thing. I think when you have been able to see, the visual memories I have are very much the visual memories of a child. So my brain still wants to paint the colours, it still wants to create the images, and often I'm surrounded by cartoon characters.
Do you think that ability to live straddling two worlds like that, do you think it lends itself to fiction, and do you think you'd ever turn your hand to fiction?
Maybe one day in the future, if I come up with something that really, you know, a seed of an idea that really, really does have the possibility to grow into something special.
One passage that did really make me giggle was when you were studying Wuthering Heights.
When I was learning Braille at school, I basically was told to find books that I enjoyed to try and inspire me to read more, because I was so absolutely not interested in Braille at all. For me, it was as I said in the book, it was a paper with a rash that I took an instant allergy to. So I decided I was actually going to read Wuthering Heights, because I loved Wuthering Heights, and I was doing it for part of my A-levels at school. And I thought I'd take it on holiday with me, and I think it was about 15 volumes for one. It was a disaster. But the other book that I decided I would scoop up was Midsummer Night's Dream. And I don't know if... did you read this bit? This is awful. I defaced all the books in the library by accident. I had beautiful nails, because apparently I was felling the top line of the dots above the one I was reading. But unfortunately, Puck... features quite a lot in Midsummer Night's Dream, and it's one of the plays that the younger members of the school would actually do, because it was a simpler play. And anyway, I popped the book back in the library. My English teacher came up to me and he said, "Verity, did you read Midsummer Night's Dream over the half term?" And I said, "Oh, yes, I did actually." And he said, "Yes, you've removed the lower dot three from all the P's of Puck." I'm like, "Oh,
no!"
And so it became a letter F. So, yeah, I loved the art of literature, but I struggled with the medium through which to appreciate the art.
It clearly never put you off reading, though. Are you still
no.
a voracious reader?
As a blind person, for me, I mean, back to something like Wuthering Heights and Tessa the D'Urbervilles, books like that that have the most incredible description of landscape and place. To hear it described in such beautiful language, in such detail, I think is such a gift to people that can't see. Because for me, you know, the author really does paint a picture of something which is invisible otherwise. It really does transport me out of my disability and also into the sighted world, you know.
Yes, and I think that comes through very strongly from your writing. You're creating a two-way road back to the sighted world, but also for the sighted world to come into our world and try and understand what it is to be a blind person.
I think it's really important to explain to people that, you know, it's not just as simple as closing your eyes and navigating, you know, the room, because we do use, you know, if you have a little shred of something, you use it to the maximum of your ability to create the vision in front of you. And it may not be entirely visual, but that little bit of vision that you have does actually paint a stronger picture with your other senses. You know, if you know it's day and you know it's night, I mean, I think it must be very, very difficult if you are black blind to not have that perception of light and dark. For me, that's the access of my senses, you know. And I think if you can explain that in a way that isn't scary to people who can see, their understanding, I think often the way to do that is through humour. I think humour is a very disarming mechanism with which you invite people in, as opposed to tell them what it is and expect them to accept it. You actually invite them to come and, you know, have a little piece of how it feels, and it's not all dark and gloomy and scary. Yes, of course, at times it is, especially if you're at Covent Garden Tube Station, it can be quite nerve-wracking. But, you know, generally there are very positive sides to it too. And I think this is where writing is so important, because it does engage our other senses. You know, when somebody writes beautifully about food, I feel starving. You know, my mouth is watering. I can taste the food. You know, when someone describes a beautiful landscape, you know, same thing. You can hear, you can sense, you can taste, you can feel. And I think, although it is a physical act of reading, there is this, it's probably the one medium that opens up all our other senses as well.
Language is the ultimate way of expressing your individuality, and the gift of being able to do that, I think, is a bit of a lifesaver for some of us.
Absolutely, I agree. And I think it's just something, I think it's an art, you know, book readings where you go, and I love that when you go and listen to the author reading the book. I think it's a gift that may have derailed for a wee while, but has come back into fashion. And I love that. I think it's so inspiring.
So on the programme, we have a feature called Books of My Life, typically one from childhood, a rainy day book, and a book read recently to share with the listeners. So without wishing to put you on the spot, Verity Smith, does anything spring to mind?
I would say the most inspiring book for me as a child was a book called The Velveteen Rabbit. It's a beautiful story about a little boy's toy rabbit that he loved and loved and loved, and he had measles, unfortunately not the toy rabbit, but the little boy, and all his toys got thrown away and burnt. And the little Velveteen Rabbit was put out into the garden, and he became real because he'd been loved so much. And it was a book for me as a child that possibly, I think, going, obviously with going blind, it was a book that made me think there's no such thing as an end, there's always a beginning. And it took away the fear of a lot of uncertainty, and it's just a really warm, beautiful book. Ooh, my Curl Up and Rainy Day book, gosh. Actually, it's by Gerald Durrell, and it's called My Family and Other Animals. And it's a very easy read, but it's a very humorous read, and it's about a boy discovering his love of animals, his love of everything extraordinary, and just the wonder. It's a book that just takes you out of yourself. It makes you feel that, oh my gosh, my family's really weird, and so is his. It's just a really easy, fun book. I would say my life-changing book is a book called The Alchemist. It's about a man's journey, and what I love about this book, it's a very comforting book because it tells me that we can journey, we can travel, but we need to actually find who we are and where we are within ourselves, because often we're too busy running and we're too busy looking and we're not actually seeing. There's a real peace in it, a real sense of peace when you come to the end of the book. You realise, oh, he's almost been chasing his tail, but he's had wonderful experiences, and perhaps if he hadn't done that journey, he wouldn't have ever come back and realised that that's who he was. But it's a very, very beautiful book, and it's a very small book. It's a very skinny book, but it's definitely one that's a life changer, I would say.
Thank you so much for sharing the books of your life with us, and for sharing some of the story behind The Groper's Guide.
Lovely to speak with you, Red. Bye-bye.
Verity's joyous autobiography, The Groper's Guide, is available from the RNIB Library as talking book number 22556.
Thanks for downloading the Read On Air podcast from RNIB. Find more podcasts from RNIB on Audioboom, iTunes, and the Apple Podcast app.